you can't eat an elephant in one bite. My biggest thing was 250 words to 500 words a day. That's what I stuck to. You know, so if you just do the math, let's say you write 250 words a day times 200, which is 200 days, that's 50,000 words. That's a 200 page book. So 200 days is what? 7 months? You have a 200 page book in 7 months. That's realistic. And, you know, I've gotten to a point now where I have like a system in place where, you know, I create the book outline and then, you know, it's again, hitting that word count and realizing that the first book and the way you're writing suck at first. I mean, I'm an engineer. I was not a writer by any stretch of the imagination. That was like, English was my most hated subject in school.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Rafael is a licensed commercial real estate agent specializing in income-producing property, and along with being a full-time commercial agent, he's also the author of the Millennial Playbook series. It's a book series that focuses on personal and professional development topics for young professionals. And also as a performance coach and speaker, he's had the opportunity to speak to thousands of students and professionals on a wide range of subjects. Rafael, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Excited to be here.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. The same three questions I ask everybody who comes on the show. Can you very quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
It's kind of a windy road, I would say. So I'm originally not from the United States. My mom's Italian, my dad's Puerto Rican. So I was born in Northeast Italy, moved around Europe until I was about 14, then moved to Arizona, went to high school, got engineering degree from Arizona State University, and then got into the software business. I did that for about 5 years. And then I got into commercial real estate back in 2019. And I've been doing it ever since. So I've been in the commercial real estate brokerage side primarily. I also own a small multifamily property myself, which I house hacked, which was my first foray into commercial investments. And my business partner and myself started a company called Fidelity Development. We're going to be focusing on acquiring and redeveloping retail and industrial opportunities. So I guess that's a very brief overview of my story. Is that what you're looking for?
Absolutely, man. That gives us some color for the discussion here that we're going to have today. Italy and Arizona look just alike. I mean,
yes, identical for sure.
What was that like coming to the U.S., finishing out high school and then going to school here? I mean, that'd have been an interesting transition.
Yeah. So my dad was in the Air Force. He's Puerto Rican by descent, but obviously we lived in the United States for a long period of time. So the main transition was the scenery. Cause I mean, you go from Belgium where we were at Shape, which is Supreme Headquarters, Allied Powers Europe, NATO headquarters, a very green, very like, you know, it's just a completely different environment. And a lot of my classmates were from all over the world. I mean, you're looking, you know, Italians, Turkish, Greek, my best friend was Dutch, you know, so I had a lot of people who were from all over the world that just kind of were there because of NATO. And then you moved to Arizona, and where we moved to was Fort Huachuca, which is in the south southern part of the United States near the Mexican border. And leading to Fort Huachuca, it's literally all desert. You're like driving from the airport in Tucson down south, and it's just barren wasteland everywhere. You're just like, what in the world is this? So I remember when I first moved here, that was kind of shocking to me. Yeah. But I went to American schools in Europe too. So, you know, there wasn't as much of a language barrier or anything like that. But, you know, I think that was probably one of the biggest shocks to me.
Man, that's really cool. And, you know, the thing I love about that is the adaptability that instills, you know, especially for kids who are well-traveled. You can always pick them out because they're like, oh, yeah, sure, I can fit in here. Sure, we can. It seems like their version of what's possible is a lot bigger than someone who's never traveled or never been out or never lived in other places. It just, I don't know, you're just going with the flow and we're moving on. It sounds like you've embodied that even through college, then getting you said you were in IT, is that right?
Yeah, I was a software implementation consultant. So think of it as like a developer and consultant. So we'd go on site and implement large software projects for government agencies.
Right, right. So there you are doing that. And then you're like, you know what? Maybe I just want to go into commercial real estate and took the next plunge. What was that jump like?
I mean, again, you go from a job where it's very lucrative. I mean, we were making well over six figures to a job where you're a commission-based job. I mean, my first year I made almost nothing. And I think one of the things that allowed that to transition was the house hack property. So I bought that 4-unit property, pretty much eliminated my rent expense. And then, you know, I had reserves in place and everything else. So I knew that even if I didn't make income for a year, I wouldn't necessarily be hurting that bad. So that's the mindset that I had. And that's what enabled me to do that and kind of hit the ground running from there. But it's definitely been a road. And especially in the brokerage side for commercial real estate, there's a significant ramp up period. And so, you know, the first couple of years, you're really not making a whole lot. And I'm just finished my second year going to my third year, and I'm starting to get some traction now. That's what enabled me to do that.
What are some things you've learned on the brokerage side that you are now taking and translating into what you're doing on the investment side for yourself?
I tell people this all the time. It's like learning by transacting, because right now I'm helping other people transact real estate and using their money to learn these lessons. And a lot of these people that I'm dealing with are, you know, pretty sophisticated investors. And so you get to learn lessons from them and build those relationships with the key players within the market. And obviously that translates to you doing deals in that exact same market. So that's the first piece. And then I would say as far as having relationships with people who are looking for space, I mean, obviously we're looking at the retail and industrial side. That's kind of my specialization here locally is retail. So I've already established relationships with potential tenants. So if I were to identify a location that I think would be a good fit for someone, it may be an opportunity for me to approach them and say, hey, look, you know, I know you're looking for space. Let's see if maybe we can work out a deal where you lease out the space, we buy the building, redevelop it. And then, you know, that's your first or second or third or however many properties, because you already have those relationships. So I think those are the key pieces.
Talk to us about why you've selected retail and industrial. I mean, that's what you said. You've noted this is the silo you're going to work in. Why?
I mean, again, I come from a software background. I didn't even know anything about commercial real estate, to be quite honest with you. The reason I jumped into real estate to begin with was because my mom was a residential agent in Arizona. And so I thought about going the residential route at first, but then when I started doing more and more research on both opportunities, commercial just spoke to me more. I've always been kind of entrepreneurial. I had a small catering business in college, managed a restaurant, and I thought I was going to get in the restaurant space out of college. Didn't end up panning out, but that's what got me into commercial real estate. And the brokerage that I ended up joining, that's kind of what we do a lot of, is industrial and retail. Mm-hmm. So my broker does a lot in the shopping center space. One of our other agents within the office, which just so happens to be a son, does a lot in the industrial and development space. Right. And so I've learned a lot from them regarding those two property types. And that's kind of what made me focus on those, because now I feel pretty well versed. I can identify opportunities in those two property types. Not to say that other property types aren't great. I mean, multifamily is awesome, and other office even. I mean, if you know a lot about office and you can identify those properties that could be of value, I mean, there's unique opportunities there. It's just those two property types are what my brokerage kind of does a lot of. So
gotcha. And since you're getting a front row seat to that, it just makes sense to parlay that experience right into you on the ownership side. Is there any conflict of interest between you and the potential parties you represent as you go out hunting for your own deals?
You really have to work with tenants that are looking to lease. I mean, there are a lot of retail tenants out there that don't want to own their own physical retail space. Sure. They prefer to lease. And so if you can merge the interests together, saying, look, we're willing to buy the space if you're willing to lease it, I don't think that that's necessarily a conflict of interest at that point, because you both want to make something happen. It's just, what does that look like? And then it just becomes an open negotiation between yourself and the other party.
Got it. So you guys were doing a lot of tenant lease representation.
No, my broker, he's done a lot of that as well, but we've done a lot in the shopping center space. So representing investors that want to buy like mid-sized to large shopping centers. So, you know, like a strip center that has like bakeries and nail salons, and it can have medical uses, optometrists, you know, that sort of thing. It's just neighborhood strip centers is what we've done a lot of recently. So since I've started in the business, that's probably where the largest focus that I've had in the investment space has been.
So my next question is going to be, what opportunity is there in the retail space? And it sounds like that's the one where you see the greatest upside still.
It depends on what your cup of tea is. There's a lot on the single tenant net lease side that's becoming extremely popular, where you got the Dollar Generals out there, you've got standalone buildings like the Starbucks's, et cetera. So if you like more of a passive type of investment opportunity, that could be a great buy for you. In particular, if you can find an opportunity whereby if the tenant were to leave in the 20-year period or 30-year period, you could still achieve a pretty solid rent growth at that point. So if you can find a well-placed piece of real estate that has Starbucks or some of these other types of corporate tenants in it, and if they were to leave, which is the worst case scenario, 20 years from now, once the lease expires, what rents could you achieve at that point? So that's like something to consider as you're going through that opportunity. And then I really love like strip centers located on high traffic roadways, great visibility. And the tenant mix is really what you got to look at. I mean, you got to think about experiential tenants and things you can't replicate through online. So nail salons, bake restaurants, although it has been somewhat of a challenge through COVID, I think going forward, it's still going to be something that's very strong. You've got some specialty stores where it may or may not be able to be replicated online. So it really just depends. That's why strip centers are so unique, because you really have to analyze each of the tenants, what their viability is, what's backing up those leases. If they're a multi-location franchise, it's going to be way better of a tenant than maybe a one mom and pop shop, you know? So it's like, there's a lot more variables to consider as you're looking at these opportunities. And the intersection too, the last mile is even more of a value here, because you think about it, a lot of these shopping centers are located in very good locations. So like some of these rundown old shopping centers, they could be converted into last mile delivery silos. You know, I mean, you're seeing a lot of utility from, you know, the Amazons and various other online providers that are saying, oh, we value physical retail. Amazon bought Whole Foods. They got the Amazon 4-star stores now. And think about it. Let's say you buy something on Amazon and you don't necessarily like it. Right now, you'd have to go through the process of printing the tag and going to the post office or whatever. But if there's a physical retail store nearby for Amazon, you could say, well, you know, I'll stop by the Amazon store a little bit later. And then you go drop off the product and it's like, oh, by the way, while you're here, here's like 20 or 30 or 50 other items that you could potentially buy. So that's an upsell opportunity for Amazon. So what's the utility there? It's pretty significant. So I think that online retailers are starting to realize that it's never going to go 100% online. There's going to be an equilibrium point that's met at some point, and there's still a strong case to be made for physical retail.
Talk to us about industrial. What do you see there? Why is there opportunity, and what does a good opportunity look like for you?
Industrial as a whole right now is doing extremely well across the nation, more so in logistics. Manufacturing is one of those things that is very much market specific, and I'm more interested in the logistics side. So finding a well-located building that's close to major arteries, whether that's, you know, rail or highways or close to the airport, those are good opportunities. And then one thing that I'm seeing locally is that a lot of contractors that don't necessarily need like a 100,000 square foot facility, you can find some of these flex buildings. So let's say it's like a 30 or 40,000 square foot building, and you demise it out into 5, 6, 7 spaces, have a small amount of office in the front so that people can receive customers or whatever they need to. And then they have a warehouse in the back. I mean, those are flying off the market. I have people call me all the time that's like, hey, I need like 3,000 feet of space. I only need like a 400 square foot office or 500 square foot office, but I need 2,500 square feet of office or warehouse in the back. I mean, those things lease up like crazy. And it's very hard to find those opportunities in the marketplace. And so that could be of extreme value to someone who takes like an old rundown building, you know, that may or may not be useful in its current form, but you can convert it into something like that. It could be a very lucrative opportunity.
This is the type of thing that you guys are actively looking to buy.
Yeah, we're looking at either standalone buildings for retail, in particular, if they have a drive-through capability, that would be something that we'd be very interested in, and along a high traffic roadway. And then obviously redevelopment opportunities for industrial properties. And the reason we're going with a redevelopment play to start off with is, again, we're somewhat new in the business. So ground up development is something that we eventually do want to get into, but starting out, redevelopment has a lot of benefits. And then again, you get to utilize the existing structure, the existing bones of the building, and then just kind of do it as a renovation as opposed to just a full ground up construction where you have to deal with the city. I mean, you still have to deal with the city in some capacity, but a ground up construction in particular, if the land is not properly zoned for what you're trying to do, that could even be a more cumbersome process. So Right. Just for our first couple deals, I think this is a unique opportunity to be able to do that. So
tell me about the financing side of this. Let's say you find the perfect opportunity. How are you guys going to fund it?
Again, a lot of it's self-funded, at least initially. We're going to be starting off somewhat small as far as dollar values are concerned. Under $1 million is really what we want our first deal to look like. And that's going to be either self-funded or with friends and family's money. You know, that's how a lot of people typically get started. So that'll be to start off. And then at some point after doing a couple of deals like that, it's syndication model. Again, it's just building out that network of individuals. And that's similar to what you're doing right now with your podcast and all that stuff. I have a podcast. I've written several books. I'm trying to become like an industry expert within this particular space. And that in and of itself will open up opportunities to be able to raise money for these types of deals. So
talk to me about the books. What spurred the idea? And, you know, what's the first book about? If there is just one, or if there's multiples already, tell us about the first few books you've written.
I've written 5. I'm almost done with my 6th.
Wow.
So to start, thanks, man. I appreciate it. So yeah, it started out back in 2016. I was in this position at the software consulting company that I was at. And, you know, you think I had it made, you know, I had a, you know, very lucrative job. I was in Puerto Rico on a big high exposure software project down there. And my apartment was literally a stone's throw away from the beach. Like you could throw a rock from my apartment to the beach, but inside I felt lost and confused. And again, like most 23, 24, 25 year olds of that time, you're just kind of struggling with the idea, what exactly do I really want to do with my future? And so that's when I started like my personal development journey. And I started doing a lot of research and realized that a lot of the information out there was fragmented across the internet. And so I decided to start a blog, and I started the Strong Professional which is the blog that I started, did that for about a year almost. And then after looking back on my articles, I said, whoa, I got like 35,000 words or something like that. And I read an article just recently that said that 50,000 words was a 200-page book. And so I took those 35,000 words, rounded it out, added some more words to it. And that was my first book. And then after that, that's where the Millennial Playbook series came into fruition. And then each subsequent book after that was one of the key topics that I talked about, which was personal development, professional development, exercise, healthy eating habits, and finances. So that's where the series came to be. And then my most recent book, which is after I got into commercial real estate and started doing several lease deals, I realized how cumbersome the process was and how a lot of people just didn't understand how the commercial leasing process works. So I wrote the book Before You Sign That Lease, The Small Business Owner's Guide to Leasing Commercial Space, which gives you, it's a comprehensive guide from start to finish about how do you lease commercial property. And I just finished my most recent book, which I'll be publishing in January, which is Before You Buy That Building. And then the next book is going to be called Before You Sell That Building. And then at some point, once I get a few deals under my belt and can speak more eloquently about development, it'll be Before You Develop That Building will be the next book. And so it'll be a commercial real estate series that talks about all the different concepts pertaining to commercial real estate.
Man, what are some tips or some things you would tell anybody that is looking to write a book? Because I know a lot of us have that on our bucket list. What would you tell
them? I would say, you know, you can't eat an elephant in one bite. My biggest thing was 250 words to 500 words a day. That's what I stuck to. You know, so if you just do the math, let's say you write 250 words a day times 200, which is 200 days, that's 50,000 words. That's a 200 page book. So 200 days is what? 7 months? You have a 200 page book in 7 months. That's realistic. And, you know, I've gotten to a point now where I have like a system in place where, you know, I create the book outline and then, you know, it's again, hitting that word count and realizing that the first book and the way you're writing suck at first. I mean, I'm an engineer. I was not a writer by any stretch of the imagination. That was like, English was my most hated subject in school. So starting out was brutal because I would read these sentences and I'd be like, this sucks. Like, this is terrible. And then you go through that internal battle. But after a while, you realize, okay, I'm just going to hit my word count and I can edit later. And that's where the value comes into play because word count, you feel like you've accomplished something and 250 words a day is really not that much. I mean, it's like a couple paragraphs and you're done. Mm-hmm. That's what I would recommend.
That's amazing, man. You might've spurred an idea. I mean, I put out a blog each week. That's 1,000 words per blog or more, or 1,500 sometimes. And it's like, I would have never thought that a 50,000 word book is 200 pages long. So that's, hey, thanks for that. That's pretty great.
Dude, yeah. I mean, and then I bet you'd be surprised because you could probably take that and maybe even have someone else. You could say, hey, look, like I got all these blog articles. Let's put these together and try to see if we can organize them and solicit like someone on Fiverr or Upwork to help you out with it. You may not even have to worry about, you mean you could edit it. You'll be the one editing it at least once before you send it off to another editor, but at least you can have someone do a lot of that legwork. So.
Right. Man, that's brilliant. Brilliant. Rafael, I've certainly enjoyed this. Loved hearing about your journey, what you're doing. I love the kind of rapid growth approach you're taking, both taking on things really without, you know, considering the fear that lies behind them. It seems like you just, when you decide to go do something, you just go do it and the results speak for themselves. So this is awesome. Look forward to keep tracking your retail and industrial projects as you guys take your first few down. That looks like lots of fun. I think you've shared with us a lot of great things to learn and understand. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
I think you need to surround yourself with people who have experience, right? It's one thing to learn things by yourself, and I think that's very important, but also surrounding yourself with others, right? There's a book called Who Not How that was a phenomenal book that one of my buddies recommended to me. I actually read it recently and I always knew it in my head, but that book kind of reinforced the fact. It's like, you know, there's certain things that you are really good at and you need to focus on, but there's other people out there that their cup is filled when you give them that opportunity. So, you know, don't feel like you have to do everything yourself. If you're not like the best at underwriting, then outsource it, or at least find someone on your team that can do it for you. You know, so really just that would be my advice. I don't know. I'm assuming you've had similar experiences. So
when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Don't be driven by money. Money will come when you do add value. And I guess the main thing is that I would just say, focus on your why. Focus on why you're here on earth. Because again, I really believe that each and every one of us are here for a purpose. And so if you are able to align yourself with what that purpose is, again, life will be much better for you. If you're just coming out and trying to do it for the money, you're not going to live in alignment with who you are and what you're meant to be. So
Rafael, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, learn more about your books, your podcast, or anything else you'd like to share, what is the best way to do that?
For sure, man. Again, it's an honor to be on your show. I really do appreciate you inviting me on and speaking today. It's been great to speak with you. But yes, my name is Rafael Collazo. I am a commercial real estate agent in Louisville. You can reach out to me. You can check out my website at www.rafaelcollazo.com, or you can find me on Amazon. You can check out my books. We also do have a podcast called the Commercial Real Estate Academy, where we talk about commercial real estate topics on a weekly basis. So you can check us out on there. And yeah, feel free to reach out via email and my cell phone number. You can check it out all on my website. So
Rafael, thanks so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.